You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Caitlin Durante.
My name's Jamie Loftus.
And we host a podcast about the portrayal of women in movies.
We sure do. It's called the Bechdel cast. You're listening to it right now.
Mm-hmm. This is it.
What if this was a mistake? Is there like an autoplay? The app I use for my podcast does not autoplay, but I have to assume that there are like some autoplaying podcast apps, right?
Oh, that would just like go to the next one in your
playlist?
Here's
this thing. Yeah. Mm. They're like, have you ever heard of these broads? Anyways, yeah. Now they're talking about, spoiler alert,
hi, welcome.
Tomb Raider.
Welcome to Never Not Funny with Jimmy Pardo. I'm Jimmy Pardo.
Can we do it?
We're talking about Tomb Raider.
We should do an episode of Never Not Funny with Jimmy Pardo.
Yeah, hear that, Jimmy? Invite us on your podcast.
Yeah, or we'll do a cover of an episode he's already done, where you'll be Jimmy Pardo and then I'll be the guest.
Yeah.
Jimmy Pardo, if you could email us what your favorite episode of Never Not Funny with Jimmy Pardo is, and then let us know, and then we'll transcribe it, and then perform it, and then release it as an episode of our podcast.
Yeah, how come it's okay for like bands to do covers of songs, but podcasts can't do covers of other podcasts?
Comedians do it around Halloween at like Shtick or Treat and
That's
stuff.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's like
I did a Maria Bamford joke this year. It was very cathartic and fun.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I get to do stuff that's better than what I can write. I think that's probably how bands feel when they're like, oh, let us cover a song that's way beyond our personal competence.
Yeah, sure.
So Jimmy Pardo, reach out. Let us know if you want us to do a cover of an episode of Never Not Funny with Jimmy Pardo. I think that is funny that is that is the podcast you pulled out of your ass. It's like,
yeah,
you know what we've got to cover.
I don't know why I thought of that. But hey, let me tie it back into our podcast. We just did not pass the Bechdel test because we were talking about a man.
Jimmy Pardo.
But
I would say that also, unless there's other parties that I don't know about on Never Not Funny with Jimmy Pardo, no episode of Never Not Funny with Jimmy Pardo would pass the Bechdel test.
Until he gets the two of us on it.
And we don't talk to him.
We can ignore him. And only talk to each
Jimmy
other.
Pardo.
Have us on your podcast, but please be silent.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, so if you don't
Pardo.
Already know, the Bechdel cast, we talk about the portrayal of women in movies using the Bechdel test is just a really just a jumping off point, a way to start the conversation. We talk about so much more. But the Bechdel test requires that a movie has two female characters who speak to each other about something other than a man.
There's a second Jimmy Pardo podcast called Playing Games with Jimmy Pardo.
Oh.
I've never heard of that one, but I feel like maybe I should, I'll add it to my list. What if we were getting money from Jimmy Pardo on the back end to be like, yeah, just bring Jimmy Pardo up at some point. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm suspicious of everything and everyone now, and I think everything is a secret advertisement, but sometimes you really are just talking about Jimmy Pardo.
I just accidentally started talking about Jimmy Pardo.
Every time we say Jimmy Pardo gives us $20. So thank you, Jimmy Pardo. We love you, Jimmy Pardo.
All right. Anyway, all right. So
we I feel bad for leaving our guest
here,
in the lurch.
Yeah. So sorry. We're here to talk about a specific movie, as we always are. We have a guest to help us. She's the host at Hyper RPG, and she's the co-host of the podcast Nerdificent on How Stuff Works.
Thanks for having me,
Danny Fernandez.
Yay! I am enjoying my Celsius sparkling wild berry that you can catch at any Whole Foods near you.
Yum. I hear Jimmy Pardo loves that shit. Loves it.
So Hyper RPG, which is like a Twitch channel, they don't care if we have drinks and stuff on while we're podcasting and whatnot. And I always have Celsius, and I'm just waiting for them to, because it's an energy drink and I need it. It's a healthy, sure, in quotes, energy drink. Mm-hmm. And I'm always just waiting for them to just send me packs.
That's I've like us with it. Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Right. I'm actively sabotaging my body when I'm doing product placement. And they followed us on Twitter and then they dropped the ball.
Well, I think it's now on us to reach out to them.
Okay, fine.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's loop in direct message us, Mike's Hard Lemonade, Jimmy Pardo.
Jimmy Pardo.
Let's make something happen. Playing games with Jimmy Pardo.
So anyway, thank you for joining us. We are here to talk about Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Yes.
So you first saw this movie when?
Last night.
I saw it this morning.
Yeah, I saw it last night when you had emailed me and were like, would you be down to talk about Lara Croft? I was like, yeah, sure. I'll finally watch it and see what it's. I mean, I had the video game when I was young. I didn't have the video game. It was one of the ones that my brothers and I would rent from Blockbuster.
Okay.
It was one of those. I had something similar, which was Turok Dinosaur Hunter, which that was the like hunting-ish game that I would play, but I didn't have Lara Croft. And we also had GoldenEye for our N64. Sure.
But you did play the Tomb Raider video game.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it like?
I mean, it was like had similar scenes from what she did in this. I haven't played it in like 2 decades, so I don't really remember.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But she had some of the same like flips and some of the same action sequences from this movie.
Right.
But it was something that like we would beg my mom to rent for like $7 like once a month or something. So it wasn't one of the ones I grew up with. I grew up with playing Diddy Kong Racing. So
I grew up with
I was a racing person.
I grew up with Barbie Detective on PC.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. She would go to a carnival and just stare at people and eventually you'd figure it out.
Okay.
It's usually the clown.
Yeah.
Okay. I think looking back, I'm sure my mom was like, I don't need my young boys to be like having, I'm sure that they were having thoughts with what, my mom is extremely Catholic. So I'm sure when she saw Lara Croft, she was like,
she's fully video game girled out.
Yeah. She actually is a 36 double D, which they made Angelina, they made her like a 36 D because they were like, we can't make it anymore. So
people will start to be
don't get that
frightened.
Big.
Yeah, frightfully huge. I would love it if she used her tits to knock people out.
That would be
I'd
really
be so into it.
To kill that robot. Guys, you know who loves Tomb Raider?
Jimmy Pardo.
Jimmy Pardo!
I just want to make more money from Jimmy Pardo.
Yeah. He owes us thousands of dollars by now.
Jimmy Pardo is racking up he didn't give us, the problem with Jimmy Pardo is he did not give us a cap of how many times we could say it.
True. So, Jimmy Pardo. When we say it in unison, it actually
that's
is $100.
It's $100. It's
okay.
Crazy. And if we sing it, he's in trouble.
Yeah.
I saw Tomb Raider this morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. It's like one of those movies where it came out in 2001. And so it's like something I've been familiar. I wasn't old enough to see it when it came out for sure. And I also just like didn't grow up with video games in really any way. So I just was peripherally aware of it my whole life. I do know that I've seen some sort of like, you know, and I feel like we come up across this a lot in our podcast is like sort of like corporate-y feminist articles about like 9 reasons why Lara Croft is a feminist icon. When you're just like, you see her, you're just like, probably I'm going to hazard a guess and say it's a no. But I'd seen a lot about it, but I didn't know this was a movie about the Illuminati.
Yeah.
Pretty blatantly.
Eye-opening.
Yeah. Like a pretty like hardcore education in Illuminati basics.
Mm-hmm.
I was not familiar with that term until I think Jay-Z referenced it, you know, like maybe 5 years ago. I didn't know it was a thing. So
Illuminati before it was hot.
Well, yeah. I was reading Bragg, The Da Vinci Code, and the whatever other stupid Dan Brown
no
book.
There's no world. Angels and Demons.
Yes, that one.
Yes, bitch.
And Illuminati is prominently featured in those That's narratives. True. So wow. I already knew about it.
There, I knew, I do remember, I did read, that was like one of those things that you would just, everyone, you had to read it, whether you felt attached to it in any way. We had like a family copy of the Da Vinci Code. Had to get her. I got it like last. It was dirty. It was covered in, you know, like Cheeto dust. And I was like, oh, I guess I've got to read the Da Vinci Code now. And then that horrible movie came out.
Yeah.
Where Alfred Molina is in it.
Is he really?
Alfred Molina is in it. Yeah. And the priest whips himself and you're like, oh.
Wow.
That's all I remember about the movie. Alfred Molina's in it. Priest whips himself.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks in it? No. Or is that Angels and Demons?
No, I think he's
no,
in
he's
it.
No, he's in it. Yeah, in he plays yeah. the... He's in both. He plays the guy whose name we'll never know.
Dan Brown, probably.
Yeah.
He plays Dan Brown.
Dan Brown's like, what if I was cool?
Robert Langley? Is that a... I don't know. Anyway,
you literally knew the whole time
I
and
didn't.
You just said it.
Nah.
I don't know. I do that all the time.
That
like,
might not even be
I
right.
I don't know. And then I name an extremely specific fact. I'm like, where was he last night? Was he at this address? I'm just hazarding a guess.
Sure, sure, sure.
I was going to say, I didn't see this movie when it came out. I think I was telling Kayla, this came out the same year as 9/11. And I just was
yes.
like, I'm busy.
There was
other things going on.
What time of year?
And so I didn't see this. I also, it was a time when I was like, I was in middle school and my family had moved me to Texas. And so I just was not, I don't know, I was not watching a woman like kicking ass and some pyramids.
Sure. This was pre 9/11. It was June 15th, 2001.
Okay. Yeah. So it was, I wouldn't have seen it in theaters anyways, but I didn't catch it at the Blockbuster because of 9/11. Mm-hmm. So
it's so interesting. We have done sort of a weird amount of movies that came out right before 9/11. Yeah. Shrek being the most prominent of like, wow, truly the last stand of innocence. We got Shrek and then the whole fucking world fell apart. Draw your conclusions. But I didn't see this movie when it came out. I also didn't see Shrek when it came out because my parents were... But I did see The Master of Disguise when it came out. So it's not that we had good taste. It's just that we had $20 when we had $20.
Yes, and that's the same with my family.
Yeah, like if we had disposable income that month, then we would see whatever garbage pile was currently in theaters.
Sure. Hey, I first saw Lara Croft Tomb Raider, not when it came out either, but I think shortly after that. So I didn't see it in the theater, but I want to say I probably saw it within the next year of it being out. But I only saw it that once, so I didn't remember it that well, except for the only thing that I remember is her being in a towel in a scene in the movie, taking it off, and then you seeing her side boob.
Uh-huh.
That was the one thing I remember about it until I rewatched it the other day. I think that speaks to a lot about what message it's sending.
Before we dive into, because this is sort of like an interesting thing for us in a number of ways, where I think we figured out before we started that this is the first video game to movie adaptation we've done on the podcast that we can think of. It's also...
I actually played Heathers, the video game, a lot, so that was...
I played the Great Gatsby video game.
If you guys want to have Silent Hill, you can talk about Silent Hill.
Oh, Silent Hill would be a really interesting one. I haven't seen that.
The nurses are like murderers. So.
Yeah.
That game terrified me. But yeah, Silent Hill. Silent Hill would be an interest. Yeah.
Okay.
Woof. It's rough.
It's really rough. But this is the first video game adaptation that I think we've done on the show. And it's also, there's a number of scenes in this movie that I would be interested to see the script for this movie, because there's the first scene of this movie, and then I'll let you get into the recap. The first scene of this movie, I think on paper, would look pretty much fine.
Mm-hmm.
Where the first scene of this movie, Lara Croft is fighting a robot. There's a bunch of fancy, you know, she wins, you know, it's an action scene.
Yeah.
And she wins. But then every other part of the movie makes it so that she's like a sexual object from the way it's filmed. The way this movie treats her body in frame is extremely, you know, objectified. There's also, and I feel like this is kind of a carryover from video games, and literally anyone correct me because I don't know a lot about video games, but there's so many like action sequences in this movie where you hear, it almost sounds like the same three like vocal reactions over and over, where she's like, like she's making fight sex noises.
She is mid-orgasm, both in like how she's vocalizing things and what she looks like.
And her face.
Through the entire movie. Yeah.
Right.
Her face looks, yeah, content, like she just orgasmed.
Mm-hmm. And then the costume sort of is built into the adaptation, but it's like, you know, certainly not. She's not really protected in any way that we can see. So it was just like from the get-go, it's like, oh, okay, here is in theory a character that looks capable on paper and the movie is actively basically working against it, which I think is something that we see in Transformers as well.
Mm-hmm.
With Megan Fox's character.
Angelina Jolie actually didn't want to wear the shorts. She said that, but then she knew that it would make the fans happy, so she wore the little tiny shorts, the Lara Croft shorts. But you can see she switched out of them a couple of times.
Whenever she has cargo pants. Yeah, I was like, whenever she's got sensible pants on, I was like, she still looks hot. Like, it's not like, oh, wow, she looks like shit now. Like, Angelina Jolie can wear cargo pants.
Well, she's also wearing, like, this weird, like, gravity-reversing bra throughout the entire mm-hmm. movie where, like, it just, like, lifts
almost
her boob.
Almost pokey, yeah.
To heaven.
Yeah.
It's Illuminati. To the light.
Yes. Okay, so I'll do the recap, and then we have a lot to talk about after that. So Lara Croft Tomb Raider is about Lara Croft. She is a rich lady.
Is it Lara or Lara?
Lara.
Lara. Lara.
Lara.
Lara Croft.
It's
nope,
anything.
That was Russian.
No, that was, yeah.
That was Russian.
No. Whereas mine's like Spanish. Lara Croft. Lara.
I'm just going to say Laura. Lara? I don't
there.
Know. It'll
Lara.
Go anywhere.
Lara.
It'll, Lara. I'll say whatever.
Lara.
Croft.
Comes to me in that
moment. Croft.
Lara Croft.
Lara Croft. Croft.
There's a transatlantic vague accent that continues through this movie. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Lara Croft has an ancient tomb in her house, and she's fighting a robot
Classic.
In it. So we learn, okay, she's like, she does stuff with tombs. Maybe she's even a Tomb Raider.
Dare we say?
So we meet her and establish that fact about her. Meanwhile, there's this guy named Manfred, and he and his Illuminati friends are looking for...
Again, classic.
Yeah. They're looking for a key that when put in a certain place at a certain time, and that certain time being the alignment of all nine planets, which is also known as a total solar eclipse.
You were going to say a total lie.
a total fucking lie.
Turns out Caitlin has very strong opinions about the planets. That scene was so crazy. I'm just like, there's a lot of parts in this movie that you're like, ooh, that's fucking lazy. But that scene.
Oh my gosh.
It's just like a row of old white men in ornate chairs, and they're like, this is the exposition for the scene. The planets, 5,000 years, 1 week. It must happen now. I was like, who are you? Like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah, so this event only happens once every 5,000 years. And if they put the key in the right place at the right time, they'll find this triangle artifact thing
that will enable
them to control time.
Mm-hmm.
The stakes are high and everyone wants this.
Who's the actor
triangle.
Playing the bad guy?
His
Do
name is
him?
Ian something. He's in Game of Thrones.
Ian.
He hangs out with the dragon
yeah.
lady. Whose name is whatever, Daenerys Targaryen.
There you go. Yeah.
Again, you did it again. Whatever. I don't know.
Her name
exact
is
answer.
Robert Langley. Is that
I'm
even
not
the character's name
go.
From?
Anyway.
I love that Angelina Jolie was British. British in quotes. Whatever that accent was. But Daniel Craig was American.
Why?
Doing the worst American accent I've ever heard.
He was all over the place.
I hope they were just trolling each other. Like
it,
seeing how awful they could do it.
They're like, let's see if anyone notices if we do the worst job
yeah.
ever.
It's not, okay, sorry. It's not Robert Langley. It's Robert Langdon. So I didn't even
it
know.
It was Robert Langdon, wasn't
Langdon,
it?
Langdon, yeah.
Wow. Well,
okay, so,
I rescind my making fun of you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So back to Lara.
Lara Croft.
She has a dead dad, and she really misses him.
Classic. Love when the daddy's dead.
So she's all like, Daddy, I miss you. Meanwhile, the planetary alignment starts happening, and she finds this clock in her house that apparently her dad left behind, and it starts ticking, and inside of it is the key that's going to unlock the location of the triangle that controls time. So,
of course,
Daniel Craig shows up. He and her are like kind of rival Tomb Raiders, but there's also maybe some like sexual tension there. We don't know. So then some bad guys come and steal the key. She figures out some information that her dad left behind again about where to go and find the triangle, because the triangle was broken into two pieces and they have to find both pieces and reunite them. So
can I just talk about that plot for a second?
Yes.
Because, okay, so she has one piece and they won't work unless you have both pieces, but yet she wants to destroy them. Like, I was reading in the trivia and it was like, goof. You know how like sometimes in IMDb it'll be like movie goof, but it was the entire plot. It was like movie goof. She's trying to combine the two pieces, but she wants to destroy them so no one can get their hands on time, right? To be able to change.
Right.
They were like, she could have just destroyed the first one.
Yes.
And movie. And that's it. And nobody would have access to be able to control time. She could have just destroyed it the second.
Yeah, but instead she's like, we have to go find this other piece.
Movie goof is the whole plot.
I feel so dumb. That did not even occur to me. Yeah, this movie could have been 20 minutes shorter, and it should have been 20 minutes shorter.
It could have been like a whole hour shorter. Like, once she finds the first piece, so they go to Cambodia and they find the first piece, but yeah, she could have just been like,
destroyed it, and then nobody would have been able to fuck with time.
Exactly.
Whoa.
But the end.
That's so stupid.
It's ridiculous.
That did blow my fucking mind.
When they made a second one.
Right.
Is the second one about the Illuminati too? Like,
no, I just watched it for the first time last night.
You watched Tomb Raider 2?
Yes. It's about, they find this orb which allows them to find Pandora's box, which inside of it is like, I guess, I don't even know, for something of, who knows? It's dumb as hell.
Watching this movie made me want to watch National Treasure again.
Yeah.
Where the major plot point is daylight savings time. Still, even, I saw that movie when I was like 11, and I was like, this is fucking dumb. They're like, no, actually, we have 45 minutes more because Benjamin Franklin invented. It was just like, are you fucking kidding me? That's how we're getting out of the bad movie?
This movie made me want to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, which I will talk about later on, but I'll get there. So they find the first half of the triangle in Cambodia, and then they go to like Siberia, somewhere in Russia. They go and find the other half of the triangle. They reunite it. There's all the bad guys. The Illuminati's there. And then she is the first one to like unite the two halves together. And she's able to talk to her dad for like 2 seconds. And then he's like, no.
Is her dad...
John Voight?
Yes.
Okay. You know what's so funny?
He looks kind of good. And I was like, what?
Yeah, but in the picture of him, it didn't. Like, I saw on her desk, there was like a picture of him. And I was like, there's no way that man would have someone this hot. And then I was like, oh, that's her real dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's her real dad.
He looked like kind of like, I don't know. I think of John Voight as like so old that he couldn't look. But I guess, you know, 2001, he looked fine.
Well, he's in, have you ever
National Treasure.
I think the first movie I saw him in as a young man was Midnight Cowboy, where he goes and is a sex worker in New York City.
He looks like shit in so many movies, though. Where Holes is another movie where John Voight looks like trash the whole time. I guess I'm more familiar with his character actor later days.
Sure,
he's very good in Holes.
I love Holes.
I love Holes.
Sorry. Okay. No, that's quite all right. So basically, she gets to reunite with her dad for like a few moments in this weird like space-time thing that happens because she has the triangle. But then she's like, you're right. I have to like destroy it because it can't fall into the wrong hands, blah, blah, blah. So then she destroys the triangle and that's pretty much the end of the movie. She saves the day and everything's fine now. That is the story of Lara Croft.
Lara.
I want to say with the spinning sun planet thing that was happening in the end, the first guy that got crushed for no reason. It was like, you literally could have just jumped off of it and he just like, his spine was snapped in half. Yeah, it was like so many scenes gnarly, like that where I was like, this is so dumb. Like, I get that it's supposed to like be high stakes, but it didn't feel high stakes at all.
I genuinely did gasp when Daniel Craig got knifed.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh!
But she didn't. She didn't feel shit.
No, she didn't react.
She didn't react at all.
And then she just jumped into the pool. I was like, what is the move here? He died. He, like, you saw him die and then get hit by a second thing.
She stood there. I loved that scene with her, with watching a man get knifed, and she stood there emotionless. I loved that.
Well, I think,
like, do you guys like each other? Like, what?
This might be a good transition into one of the talking points I have, which is that she doesn't really have a personality as a character. So, like, She doesn't react. We don't see her really reacting to much of anything. We don't see any glimpses of her having a personality. Like, she's just sort of like...
I'm interested to talk about that because it's, I think some of it is like lazy, awful screenwriting where really the only thing we know about her is that she misses daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she does what she does in life. And that's her central motivation for literally everything is daddy,
mm-hmm.
which is like, fuck, fine. And then the other thing is I'm like curious about like adapting a video game character must be kind of challenging because you're playing as her, right, in the
yeah.
video game. So there's
she's like
certain,
an avatar, basically.
Right.
So.
And there's so many like protagonist avatars that I feel like are kind of hollow in terms of personality because you're supposed to be plugging yourself in.
Right.
But if you're adapting, you gotta do something.
Gotta
put something
try
there.
Harder. Yeah.
You can't just be like, let's make the clothes tighter and hope no one notices.
Right. Yeah. That's,
Daddy.
Because that's... I mean, I would love to play a game where we go around the room and try to describe her personality. Because I mean,
would say she had an attitude.
She's kind of a saucy like... minx is the best way I could describe her, I think. But even then, like, I feel like there's just not much there. So you have a protagonist with like no personality who's just sort of going through the motions of the story. I mean, feel free to disagree.
Yeah, what
but
are you thinking?
I think that I like the fact that she didn't give a shit about anyone. Like, she wants what she wants, and she doesn't care about anyone around her. So I did like that aspect of it, and probably related to it, where, like, men are telling her what to do, and she's like, no, I'm not going to do it. No thanks.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like that. I did realize that she actually, I don't think, and I'm sure someone could correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think she speaks to a single other woman.
I don't.
She speaks to a little girl.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
she doesn't speak to a single other woman, which is insane. There were no women.
It's crazy.
In the whole movie.
Yeah.
I remember having...
We don't exist.
Yeah.
In this planet, in this video game.
There's one...
It's like the crazy movie version of New York where only white people are there. It's like the crazy... Like, this is like the action movie world where there's exactly one woman and she's very hot. Like,
yeah.
that's... It's just so... Yeah, like a parallel universe. And it's crazy because it's like, I don't... You know, if any of us saw this movie when it came out, that probably wouldn't register as like, oh, there is not another woman
no,
in this movie.
No, because we're so
really
used to seeing movies almost entirely populated by men. So we're like, yeah, this is just how movies are.
I also like the fact that she didn't really have a love interest. You know, she kissed, not really, Daniel Craig. Like, she was trying to save his life. And then they had, like,
she gave
some
mouth-to-mouth.
I was
going to
give him mouth
and I know.
And does like, that make sense?
No.
Can you give someone mouth-to-mouth underwater?
No. In
that
the movies,
like
I'm like, aren't you pushing carbon dioxide into yeah. his mouth and not oxygen?
Are you killing him? What are you doing?
Well, I was like, is this mouth-to-mouth or are they kissing? Like, I did not
Goodbye.
Know. I did not know.
Not clear at all.
No, but yeah, so I like the fact that they didn't. I thought that was semi-progressive. For 2001, that she didn't have some guy she was fawning over.
I also made note of that, and I right. appreciated that there wasn't some like romantic subplot. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess maybe I didn't mind her action sequences. I actually liked that a lot. I know that they did make her heavily sexual, and obviously by padding her tits so much that I do wish that she was able to use them in combat, but I understand. Maybe in this new one.
Weaponize the tits.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, one thing that they do at the beginning and the end, because the last mini sequence of the movie, I also was just like, whoa, what is happening here? Something that happens at the beginning and the end of the movie where it's one of the guys who, like, lives at her house and is one of her servants. You know, she comes down, she's nude, and she's walking around nude in front of her employees, which is like, is this ethical? But whatever. She's walking around nude, and he's like, you know, you're not being much of a lady, or whatever. Like,
right.
we need you to be a lady. And then
a
she's like,
a bit
screw
more modest.
You. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then
like, a lady should be modest. And she's like, a lady should be modest.
She's like, yeah, she's like, sometimes it feels good to be bad. You're just like, whatever, great. And then that comes back at the end, where in the last scene of the movie, she is dressed like, quote-unquote, lady?
Like Sunday brunch.
Yeah, mm. like she has a sun hat and a white dress, and she goes down, and the same guy is like, oh, she's a lady now. Which nothing in the movie would really lead you to be like, and now she's a lady. But she randomly is, and then
yeah.
she goes down, pays homage to her actual daddy's grave, and then goes back upstairs, and they're like, time to fight another robe. They take a picture of her because she's a lady.
Right.
And don't then they're like, time to fight another robot. I'm like, is this just, first of all, I would hazard to guess this scene is just bad and stupid. Mm-hmm. But the subtext of it is like, you can be forced into a role you don't want and fight a robot. Like, that rung a little hollow for me. I'm like, oh, I can also shoot people in a sun hat?
Let's see if you can do it in a dress.
I know.
It looks like it was from Forever 21.
It was not a good dress. Mm-mm.
I don't know. I did notice that the screenplay, it was billed, like a woman was billed at the top, mm-hmm. and then it was like two male writers underneath. So like three people wrote this, but they made sure to put the woman first.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Be like, it's her fault.
We've got...
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, let's implicate her in this screenwriting crime.
We've got three story by credits, which are Sarah B. Cooper, Mike Werb, and Michael Collery.
Mike Werb.
And then we've got a writing credit for the adaptation from Simon West, who was also the director of the movie. And then we've got two screenplay by credits from Patrick Massett and John Zimmer. So this movie was
Jimmy Pardo.
And and Jimmy Pardo. Special,
as the end, as this, in most movies, if you stay till the end of the credits, we'll thank Jimmy Pardo in the credit.
I mean, well, so this is an example of a movie with a female protagonist, but made almost entirely by men. So it's going to be coming from a man's perspective in terms of like writer, director, and all of that stuff, except for one story by credit from a woman. But men are largely responsible for crafting the story of Croft. And we see hints of that all throughout the movie, especially, I mean, we already touched on this, but like Laura Croft's character, Laura Croft is hypersexualized. Like,
yes.
From minute one, even like you said, the scene where she's fighting the robot in the very first sequence, on paper, that's probably a fine scene. But when we see it realized on screen, you see her in her outfit, which is this tiny little tank top and her giant pointy boobs that like
1940s she would
be
boobs.
If you're doing that, you would be wearing a sports bra. You're not going to be wearing this like bra that like makes your, I don't know. Sorry to body shame a big boob woman, but like it just is so impractical. That the tiny shorts that she's wearing, like these giant combat boots, and then like just the framing of how
the framing, yeah,
like,
the framing is
male gaze, shots of her hips, shots of her ass. Like there's a point where like she's sitting on the ground and then she spreads her legs and then like the robot like hand comes down and smashes in between her legs.
Yeah. Just to even like make the male gaze thing more egregious, there's a number of action scenes where Lara Croft, I mean, she is doing things. Once you know that whole scene where she's just like on a log and everyone's like, whoa. She's on that swinging
right.
log.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the swinging
yes.
log has to poke something and then the Illuminati's released. Wasn't totally sure what's happening there. But she's on the log and there's like action scenes where she's surrounded by men mm-hmm. who are just kind of watching.
They're,
like
yeah.
literally the male gaze of just like, whoa, where it's that action thing that we come up with again and again. We'll reference that McSweeney's article again, where it's like anytime a woman does something that like implies that she's capable in an action way, cut to a shot of a man being like, oh. What?
Wow.
She can do the thing? Like, and that shot happens 4,000 times in this
totally.
Movie.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, also, because, I mean, her choreography is, like, sexualized also. Like, she's doing
yeah.
a lot of, like, flips and, like, you wouldn't see a male action hero fight the same way as you see her. Like,
oh, I see
men
what you mean,
are just,
yeah.
like, flipping around and, like, being all, like, willowy and writhing mm-hmm. the way that she is in a lot of her fight choreography. So I feel like there's this idea in Hollywood that action movies are for men, and men aren't going to want to see an action movie that's starring a woman unless she's hypersexualized
right.
and she, like, looks like a supermodel, basically. So that was this idea that this movie for sure perpetuates. One, that sends a message to women that's basically like, oh, if you want to do anything physical, you have to look like you're mid-orgasm. Sorry.
Yeah. Or you have to be fucking hot as hell,
you
like
have
Angelina
so
Jolie.
Hot
the
while you're doing
lines
it.
That,
But I feel like she's, I mean, aside from this character, Angelina Jolie herself is hypersexualized in most of her roles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Especially at this
Which
time.
Is a bigger problem.
But then in general.
Yeah.
Her action in Mr. and Mrs. Smith is mm-hmm. all sexual.
Yeah.
Granted, that's like a heavily sexual tension where she met her husband.
Mm-hmm.
That was someone else's husband.
Right. Oops. Sorry,
Oops.
Jennifer.
That's okay. Life happens.
They're hanging out again.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Well, good for them.
You know, whatever.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I want to know how she felt about it.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting conversation, is like how she felt, because I feel she probably was okay with a lot of it, but I don't know. I guess I'm making that assumption. Because she seems to have taken a lot of roles like that.
That's true. Well, I mean, not to say that it's irrelevant how she feels about it, but I think more importantly, just the fact that we're seeing, like, we're making all these movies geared toward usually young, impressionable audiences, and they're, like, hyper-sexualized portrayals of women where it's like, oh, like, look at how like, I saw the Jumanji reboot movie.
Same.
And I think there is a few allusions that I think are direct references to Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Really?
Where whenever the one character ends up in the avatar that Karen Gillan plays, she ends up in this like very similar outfit, short shorts, big boots, and then like a tiny tank top. And she's getting like bitten by mosquitoes and stuff like that. And she's like, what? Like, what is this outfit? Like, are you kidding me? Like, this is so impractical. I think that's
100%. 100%.
And then her skill, her special skill in the game, Jumanji, is that she's great at dance fighting, which I think is an allusion to either this movie or just this type of movie
like
where
it,
the female action star is like this, like I said, like a willowy, super agile. So that's it. Okay. So that brings me to another scene that I was just like, what the fuck are we looking at right here? When she is like in her pajamas, these like billowing, flowy pajamas, they are purposefully not buttoned the whole way. She's attached to this like bungee cord setup, and she's just like kind of bungeeing around her living room. And then I'm like, okay, what is this for? What is she doing? Is this exercise? Is this maybe to help with her?
I loved that. Whatever that was, I was like, I want to do that in my pajamas.
It looks fun, but like, is it serving the story at all? No. But then I was like, okay, maybe it's helping with her agility. And then it got me thinking that female action stars like this have to be agile.
Yeah.
Like, that's their thing. So like, they can't be like their male counterparts, their male action stars. They can be like tough and brutish and just like kind of sloppy, and they don't have to be these like super graceful, super agile.
Yeah, they're like dirty, gritty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, not manicured.
But a female action star has to still be, and maybe I think this is like changing a little bit in the Hollywood landscape, but for sure at this time, like it was just like, well, no one's going to want to see this unless she's like perfectly flipping around and like being super delicate and agile.
This is a lot of like Bush era shit. Yeah. Of like, and it does feel ultimately a little bit like I hope that some women got something empowering out of this movie, but ultimately it just feels kind of counterproductive.
Totally.
Like, this is the sort of thing that any number of crummy ex-boyfriends I've had would point to and be like, what do you mean there's no representation in movies?
Hello, feminist icon.
Lara Croft. Right. So ultimately, I do feel like it kind of gives crummy dudes something to point to be like, what do you mean, like, women are underrepresented? Here's this woman who has never existed,
here's
never
one
will.
Example. Yeah.
Well, you know? So the video game, I mean, was obviously made with the intent of young men, you know, wanting, well, why would a young guy want to play a woman? Well, we're going to make her with huge tits, and then that might be fun for them to play with. But it was also kind of inspired by James Bond. And I think if they had approached it more in that way, not saying that she's the same as that character, but I agree that so much of her is shot from a male gaze, and James Bond is able to sleep with like multiple women and we see his body and things like that, but yet it's not in a demeaning way. It's in a power way.
Empowering, yes. It's like, wow, look how fucking cool he is.
One of the things I noticed with this, okay, there is a totally cuckoo bananas Angelina Jolie shower scene.
That's from the video game.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Who in their life has ever flipped their hair around in the shower? But my favorite thing, this is a thing you see in movies all the time, where the hot protagonist stares into their shower spout. It's like, this looks so uncomfortable. Who's looking into their, like, wash me, daddy? Like, it's so fucking weird.
Clean my eyes. Yeah.
Make me see.
No, that shower scene is from,
so crazy.
And I think it might be a tiny bit more graphic in the video game. And so they toned it down, and the only thing that they could show in this was her side boob, which she does have killer side boob.
She does.
Like, holy crap. Mine is so not as perky compared to that.
I've got a weird texture to the side boob. It's a whole thing. You've got to arrange it just so. Yeah. The shower scene did make me laugh out, like, LOL.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's her a close-up of her head, but she's, like, again, mid-orgasm, where she's just, like, throwing her head back and, like...
staring into hot water.
Writhing around in the shower. No one showers like that. You spend
your shower... She's alone! I would say if you had video footage of anyone showering alone, it would be some of the most humbling thing you ever see. I'm like, oh, it's sudsing with their pubes. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Not fun to watch, but makes sense.
Oh, weeping quietly.
Yeah, crying. She does that thing.
Mumbling despacito. Like, horrible.
She does that thing where she, like, has her head down and then she flips it up and all her hair comes flipping and wet.
Has ever done that?
I've never done that in my life.
No one ever
has. What would the purpose be? You'd make a mess.
Right. So that scene happens. And then she steps out of the shower and she's in this tiny little towel.
This is when she's not a lady.
Right. Yes. So her.
Also, get out of the bathroom, pervert.
Right.
Lada.
So her butler is named Hillary, but he's a man. And
progressive.
Yeah, progressive.
Feminist icon/peeping
You guys remember Ashley Parker Angel of O-Town?
Yes.
Progressive. For its time.
And a three name to boot.
Yeah.
Love a good three name.
So she comes out of the shower. She's in this tiny towel. The butler holds up a dress and this pair of high heels. And she's like, ugh. No dresses and heels for me. And he's like, I'm only trying to turn you into a lady. And she flings her towel off, and that's when you see the famous side boob. And then he does the whole thing where we talked about where he's like, I'm just trying to, he's like, a lady should be modest. And she's like, yes, a lady should be, implying she's not a lady. She's not like the other girls. She's a little bit different. She wears combat boots and she drives a Jeep and she fights robots. Fine if you're not conforming to this, like, standard. But then she's also agreeing that, yes, ladies should be a certain way. I mean, this is dumb. This is a throwaway moment. But it's just, like, I feel like the movie's trying to comment on, like, gender and gender roles. But, like, you don't get to do that and then also sexualize your main character in an insane
within
way.
Within an inch of their lives. Like, it's just so. But the reason I brought up the shower scene is because we do later. And I was sort of like, I don't know what I would call this. We do get a, not quite as egregious, but we do get a Daniel Craig shower scene and a little bit of commentary on his full frontal, which I think is the only other time we see a shot of just a woman when he answers the door and then a woman is straight up horrified at whatever gnarled situation Daniel Craig has going on. Because I've never, like, who would see Daniel Craig nude and be like, like, right. I was like, what was
I'm
happening?
Terrified. Yeah. What did she see down there?
It was fear.
I think just opening the door on a naked man is going to shock anyone who's not expecting it.
I mean, but are you going to be
Are you screaming
happy?
Your head off and running away?
Yeah, or you'd be like, okay, when you're not expecting a penis, I would probably scream, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've all had the unexpected penis.
That's true. Oh, boy.
So... So I would probably scream.
Yeah, I think it's not that unusual of a reaction for her. But the point is, in that scene, you do see, like, a good chunk of his naked body, pretty much everything besides his dick, in the scene. But he's not framed in the same way Angelina Jolie is, where she's just, like, writhing around and, like, I'm having an orgasm in the shower. So the way men and women are framed in this movie and many, many action movies is very differently. And I actually wanted to go back to, Danny, something that you were kind of touching on, which is that...
Danny just took a swig of Celsius.
Celsius. Sparkling Wildberry.
Live Fit.
Get it at Vitamin Shop, GNC, Whole Foods, and Erewhon.
And Jimmy Pardo's refrigerator.
On your way there, throw on an episode of Playing Games with Jimmy Pardo. There's only 6 episodes. He needs your support.
Yeah. So I think you can make the argument that men are also to some degree sexualized in action movies. Like, male action heroes are perhaps
a different kind of hero.
It's different. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm going to just sort of, like, play devil's advocate here and say that they're often, like, very muscular, very macho, sort of this, like, ideal standard of masculinity. You see their, like, glistening muscles a lot of the time. But it's, again, it is not the same. It's
I think
not...
they're sexy. They're not sexualized.
Yes.
I think they're sexy because they're bachelors, if we're talking about Bruce Wayne or Clark Kent. To them, it's like they have to be muscular for their job because they're saving the world. But they're not shown in a way that is hypersexualized the way that women are.
Right.
And I also think that both male and female action heroes of this era, at least, they're sexualized in different ways, but for the same audience. It's both for men. The way that Lara Croft is sexualized is for a male audience, and the same way that James Bond would be sexualized in a different way for that same male audience.
Yeah, it's basically like, oh, here's this like ideal that I want to strive to be when it's a male action hero.
Right.
And then when it's a female action hero, it's still like, oh, here's this woman I want to conquer and make my conquest and not actually like identify with, even though she's the hero of my story.
Yeah, I think that male superheroes are kind of more what I see as like athletes, where athletes are sexy. They have great bodies, but they're not as hypersexualized the way that I think female superheroes in quotes, because I feel like most of the women in this era were not really seen as superheroes as much as like Catwoman, Poison Ivy, things like that were like villains-ish.
Right.
Where they're super sexual.
Totally.
To the point where they're basically like handicapped of just like Catwoman is so horny she can't really do her job. She cannot do anything.
Well, and here's the thing though, is that they use the superheroes themselves, like if we're talking about, let's say, Bruce Wayne, Batman, like they don't use their sexuality as, you know what I mean? Like they're so women are using their sexuality as a weapon. So that is showing how they're different as far as how they're written.
Yeah. Right.
And their purpose.
Which is, doesn't necessarily happen that much in this movie, but in the Tomb Raider sequel, there's a scene where she like is basically seducing Gerard Butler. They kiss, and then it's basically to distract him so that she can handcuff him to like a railing so that he doesn't run off and do something stupid.
There is
so that's
kind
a perfect example of like women using like women action heroes using their sexuality as like a weapon almost.
There's a scene that's like sort of like that. Again, it's like I feel like Lara both doesn't have much of an interest in a romantic conquest and also is just kind of an underwritten character in general, so it's hard to know what she feels a lot of the time. But there's a scene where she's with Manfred Powell, feminist icon Manfred Powell, and they're in a cave of some sort. He's threatening to kill her, but it's a very set, it's like there's one scene where it's particularly sexy where he's like, I'm gonna kill you. She's like, I don't know what to believe. And then he's like, I knew your daddy. And she's like, oh, what?
And oh yeah, and that's when he's like, he was in the Illuminati, and she's
what?
Like, no, he couldn't be. That's the other thing
my
I wanted to say.
My daddy would never be in the Illuminati. So
her voice is like this, like sultry, like.
But that's also Angelina Jolie. Uh-huh.
But she doesn't have to talk like that. I've seen her in other movies where she's not being all like, hello, this is, I'm Lara Croft.
But that's,
like.
But I think that's like a conversation of, because to me, I don't know, it doesn't bother me as much because I feel like, I feel really conflicted. Like if I were in a superhero movie, I would want to be sexy as fuck.
Right.
I'd want to like crush someone with my ass. But like also people respect me. Like I feel like we're in an era where like, yeah, I want to be able to do what the guys do. I want to be James Bond and fucking like fuck some guy and be like, see ya, you know, and like hop into my helicopter and leave him a basket or whatever A-Rod does to the women he dates.
leave
him a basket or whatever. Like I want to do that. So I want to be as sexually progressive as the men, but then I want to be respected. And that's the issue where people still respect people like James Bond or Bruce Wayne, who fucks chicks and then leaves. But yet we're not respected as women much of the time. There's no way they could have done that with Wonder Woman. You know what I mean? And shown her in that way where she's just like fucking a bunch of guys. And I mean, they could have, but
it wouldn't have been received. Well.
Yeah, she has to be extremely classy. Mm-hmm. She has to be like a mother. Essentially, she's like the mother of Earth in a way that her counterparts in the Justice League are not, where Jason Momoa and Bruce Wayne and people like that, where they're kind of like, yeah, fuck chicks, you know, whatever. And she has to be like super classy.
Well, I think, so we might get there. It's too early right now in the Hollywood landscape to have a female action star like that.
Fucks.
Right. But so I think we just need to, an action hero, a superhero who's a woman, I think can be sexy without being sexualized the way we were talking about how they frame male action heroes, where they're like, they're buff. Like you've got your John McClanes and your James Bonds and you're like all the superheroes who are like muscular and sexy, but they're not framed in a way that's hyper sexualizing them. So I think like we just it's not hard to do that with women either.
I know, we have Jessica Jones, who I feel like is a very conflicted, you know, it shows her dealing with mental illness and alcoholism and things like that. So we do have her, and I like the fact that she's not one dimensional, mm-hmm. and she's not very sexualized, even though she does have sex. She has sex with Luke Cage that they show, but, and probably other people. So I will say that they are working towards that, where we do have flawed female characters that mm-hmm. don't have to be, you know, as classy and put together as sure. Diana Prince.
Right.
Not enough.
Yeah. Not yet.
And I do think that the cinematography of this movie works against its protagonist.
Totally.
Quite a bit. And I looked it up. You're not going to be shocked. A man was the cinematographer for this movie. Also has done Die Hard with a Vengeance, The Incredible Hulk, the most recent one, mm-hmm. And then Clash of the Titans. So it's like, this is not even a cinematographer who doesn't know what cinematography on an action movie should look like.
Yeah.
But because it's a female protagonist, there are times where there is action happening, but we're looking at an ass.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's great that the ass is there. It's not even that I don't want to see the ass, but when someone's getting stabbed, show me the person getting fucking stabbed. That's just how a movie right. should look.
Well, I think it goes back to the fact that there's an assumption, I think still, that only men like action movies. So if there is going to be a female hero, then they're going to have to cater to that male audience. But that's like, first of all, ludicrous, because guess what? I'm a woman and I love action movies. So the fact that like there's this assumption that like, oh, well, we can't have like a female action star that's just like, you know, a normal woman who we aren't showing her ass and tits the entire movie. Like, we have to cater to this male audience.
Well, like, with the new one that's coming out with mm-hmm. Alicia Vikander, I noticed that they didn't bump up her tits to 36DD. So that's...
Yeah.
They let her have her
body.
Tits. Yeah, her body. It's very
she
much
got
her
to
body.
Have her own body.
Yeah.
Which is fine, you know, either way. But I mean, like, they let her, have her body is what I meant. So if you have 36DD, I'm very jealous, and I think you should be in a superhero movie. But I don't know if that's the only representation.
Right. I was watching the trailers, and it seems as though the framing and the cinematography and stuff like that doesn't seem to be as through the lens of the male gaze as much, or maybe not even at all. It's going to be hard to tell exactly until you see the whole movie, but
right.
to me, it seems as though it's a little bit more respectful of its female hero than,
which is
than
great.
This movie.
I hope it is.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. Oh, she does.
She also looks like she's like 5'2", so I'm like, she's so scrappy.
Yeah.
And I just want to see her like pull, like using like a shard of glass to stab someone in the in the neck or something.
Which is like what I want to see. Like, I hate that there's that whole stupid like dance fighting thing that has to happen in this 2001 Tomb Raider, which is what I think what that Jumanji reference is to, where she's like, she's good at dance fighting because she has to be super dancey and sexy in her fight choreography. Right. Where like, I think this new Tomb Raider is, we're going to see her be a bit more scrappy and sloppy, because like, I think this one is setting up that she's not already an adventurer. Like, she finds information from that her dead dad left behind, so it's the same thing.
Yeah.
She does have a dead dad, but like, she's like, we're gonna go on it. Like, she's not yet an adventure seeker.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's gonna be like a made hero type of story.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't mind how like Lara was set up in this movie, where it's like, oh, she's already done shit. She knows what she's doing. I'm not exactly sure what she's done or why, but it's clear she's done shit. She's got bungee cords in her house. She's shooting robots in
her
house.
Sex dungeon.
And I was like, okay, she's got some sort of established something, mm-hmm. but...
Oh, actually, I have a good point about that. Get ready.
hot brag.
Okay, so Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Is very similar in story structure to Raiders of the Lost Ark, the first Indiana Jones movie. I'll just kind of go quickly through the main story beats of both, and that they both have an opening sequence where we meet the hero and learn that they do shit in tombs because are archaeologists, I guess. We for sure know that about Indiana Jones. We're not so sure about what Lara Croft's credentials are. They both have a bad guy who has their heart set on acquiring an artifact that will allow them to wield tremendous supernatural power. We see the hero get their hands on a round medallion type object that will lead them to said artifact, and that they
medallion adjacent.
And then the hero seeks to destroy it so that the bad guys can't get their hands on it and abuse this power. The hero and the bad guys both travel to a different country to use the medallion key thing to figure out where the artifact is. And then the bad guys exploit the locals to do a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of trying to figure out where this thing is. Mm. It happens in both movies. Then the round key medallion thing has to be in a certain place at a certain time to show them where the artifact is. And then the hero and the bad guys come in contact with each other. They find either all or part of the artifact, depending on which movie we're talking about. There's some scary things that happen to the hero that they have to fight off, either snakes or statues that come to life.
I totally forgot about that part.
And then finally, in both movies, the hero and the bad guys travel to a second location, either to perform a ritual with the artifact or to find the other half of the artifact. And then basically they both end with the hero either destroying or getting the artifact away from the bad guys and them saving the day and winning. So very similar movies in terms of story structure. However, there's a few key differences in that Indiana Jones is not hypersexualized the way that Lara Croft is. Yeah, Indiana Jones is a good movie. And Indiana Jones is able to find stuff or figure out a lot of the stuff for himself, either because he already has the knowledge to get him to the next step, or he just does the work himself to figure out the next clue or to find the next thing. Whereas Lara Croft gets a lot of help, and it's usually from men.
Well, yeah, because she's never met a woman before.
She's never met a woman.
I think that would be interesting. That would be kind of how I would judge her character, is how she treats other women.
Yeah. Right.
So would she be one of the people that's like, I'm not like the other girls, you know?
I'm a guy's girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't even. Well, you don't know. She's never met a woman before.
But we don't know. Yeah. We don't know if she would be all like, fuck these dudes, you know?
She might not even know that other women have... she knows that she had a mom, but she never met her mom.
Well, that's the other thing. So she... Yeah, she's... Her dad and her mom are dead, but she does not give a fuck about her dead mom. She only cares about her dead dad. And I guess you could argue, she didn't know her... She didn't remember her mom. But even so, her dad, it seems, died when she was a child. And I understand, still being hung up about it, but it's basically her main character trait. And this is, what else is part of your personality?
It's like not...
Also, why don't you care about knowing anything about your dead mom?
I wrote down there's a few other movies that we've come across where there's a young female protagonist where that is the main... Phantom of the Opera. The main thing we know about Christine Daae is that her dad died, and it's because of that she actively self-sabotages her own life and ends up making out with Gerard Butler, who looks like shit in that one. There's another one. I'll think
all
of
my Disney movies are all
dead
about
moms.
The
yeah.
dead mom, but I have to please my or save my dad, which is Beauty and the Beast, The Little Mermaid, Aladdin.
And that kind of brings me to the climactic scene of this movie. It is, I thought, great that at no point in this movie that I could identify, Lara is never damseled. Mm-hmm. She always does save herself, sometimes with help. She's never met a woman before. That's all interesting.
And she ends up saving Daniel Craig.
Right. And there's that reverse that was okay, that is good. Mm-hmm. That is to an extent progressive. But all the stakes in the climactic scene for Lara are connected to two male characters, which are her dad and Daniel Craig, who gets straight up knifed and she feels nothing.
Where she's
still
it.
Whoa.
She didn't even blink.
And then she's just
she didn't gasp.
No. She was just oh.
Maybe she knows that she's going to be able to reverse time and save him.
I think she just was you motherfucker. Now I got to do this thing.
Well, because the climactic scene, she goes into the time hole thing. John Voight's there. And instead of, we could have had some sort of satisfying character-driven moment where we get to know Lara a little better because we don't really know her that well. But instead of her discovering it for herself, John Voight literally delivers the lesson to her in the time hole and is some stupid turn of phrase with you can't steal time, you have to give back time. And then she's like, but daddy, no. And he's like, but daddy, yes. And then they touch fingers and then it's over. And so she's told what the lesson is and then goes back and executes what she was told by mm-hmm. by daddy. But it was that was just like one of those little moments where I'm like, oh, that's a big missed opportunity where we could have had a moment of seeing her work through an emotional thing,
right?
Which we haven't seen her do the entire movie, right? And instead, daddy does it for her, and then she goes back.
That's the thing. Anything she learns about the key clock thing, anything she learns about anything else, is really information delivered to her or left for her by her dad, or she has to go and consult like one of her dad's old friends. Like, you often don't really see her figuring it out for herself. Like, she is an active character in that she does drive the story forward. She is making decisions that steer the direction the story takes. But unlike, like I said, Indiana Jones, who already has a lot of this knowledge or is just more active in that he is finding things out for himself, she's getting a lot of the information necessary to push the story forward through someone else. Someone else is giving it to her or helping her in a way that, like, I think a male counterpart action hero would not need that much help.
Agree.
So that's frustrating.
I don't like when female protagonists are robbed of catharsis because men can't write movies good. Bugs me. Don't like
That's a lot of them.
Yeah. Can I just say that there's a character named Bryce, which is Lara Croft's kind of technology sidekick.
I kind of liked him.
I liked him.
He's
too.
Like the He's rebel. Squirrely. I like him. He's also in Paddington 2.
Wow.
Out there.
I'm glad Alfred Molina's not in this movie. I'm glad that he skipped this one.
Also, Aristotle gets mentioned in this movie where one of the characters is like, oh, this thing that only happens every 5,000 years, blah, blah, blah. It even predates Aristotle. So shout out to our producer.
Shout out Aristotle. Yeah.
And our other producer, Jimmy Pardo.
Can I just say shout out to Jimmy Pardo? Because he does owe us a lot of money.
Does anyone have any other final thoughts about Lara Croft Tomb Raider?
What a classic film. It's timeless.
A feminist text, for sure.
A feminist masterpiece.
Couldn't be, not possible without Jimmy Pardo. I think that's all I had.
I think that's all I had as well. One last thing I wanted to mention is I like how this is one of those movies that anything could only really happen because the character is excessively wealthy, like Bruce Wayne, like Tony Stark, where like they just have a bunch of gadgets and wealth, and that enables them to like go on the adventures they need to go on.
The one laugh line for me in this movie, there was like that one part where like the UPS guy shows up and her whole house is a mess because she killed like 20 people the night before.
Right.
And she has that line where she's just like, I woke up this morning and I just hated everything. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny.
I wrote that down because I feel like that's one of the few times in the entire movie where you see a glimpse of her having a personality.
Yeah, being like, oh, she made a joke.
She made a joke. Other than that, she's just so, like, I don't know, stiff and just, I mean, maybe that's her personality, but it's just kind of boring to watch her because she's not fun really to see her interacting with people. Like I said, she's kind of a little saucy, and like you said, she's like defiant, and that like sometimes men try to get her to do a thing and she's like, no
thanks.
But other than that, she barely has a personality, and that's frustrating to me.
Why do they go through that weird thing of making her dress like a lady at the end? What was that commenting on? What was that for?
I don't know. I guess it was something that they wanted to see because she's always been, I imagine that they kind of are her caretakers in the same way that Alfred is to Bruce Wayne because her dad died. Yeah. So maybe her butlers were her caretakers.
Her daddies. Her new daddies.
Her daddies.
She has so many daddies.
Were her like caretakers, and they were like, you're always dirty, running off, you know, shooting things. Like, you're not doing anything ladylike.
So she wore a sun hat for the daddies. Yeah. I don't know. That part really, I was just like, ugh. But at the end, it is nice. There are so many movies with male and female protagonists where they'll go out of the way at the end to be like, and don't worry, they ended up together. Because I was 100% expecting Daniel Craig to be in that last scene of like, I made you an egg or whatever, you know, like he could have very easily been shoehorned into that scene.
Sure.
And I kind of appreciate that he wasn't.
Same.
Because I don't really care if they ended up together.
Yeah.
I don't think she cared either.
It wouldn't have made sense or mattered.
It seemed like they like from the second they meet, and I'm like, oh, these people have weird sex every couple of years. And that's okay.
Let's figure out whether or not the movie passes the Bechdel test.
Oh, great.
No.
No. There's one scene that's a contender. And it's when they're in Russia trying to find the other half of the triangle, and they're trying to buy these dogs from the locals, and a young girl comes up to her. They speak Russian with no subtitles, so we don't know what they're talking about. And that little girl also does not have a name and also might not even be a real girl.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
then she, like, Lara turns yeah. back around and the little girl's actually a jasmine flower. And so goes, I think it was
Jasmine.
I'm like, I think what? That
and
little
she trapped
girl.
Her. But no, that scene didn't because they were talking about her dad, right?
We can assume, but it's in, again, it's in a different language.
She
and
talked
it's
to
not
two
subtitles.
Different girls. You're talking about, yeah.
Oh.
I was talking
she to the second girl?
You're talking about the one where the little girl is sitting, she's like sitting down and yeah, they say something to each other and then she like points to the flower, right? Mm-hmm. There's another scene when they're trying to buy the dogs that is subtitled and she says,
oh,
you're
is?
Making a mistake. Yeah. At least on my TV it was. In Russian,
I didn't get that, no.
or whatever, yeah. and it said you're making a mistake by going back to find him.
Oh.
And she said, "Who are you talking about?" She said, "Your father."
Okay, so that definitely, and plus so we don't know their names. And then the other little girl that she interacts with in Cambodia, I think I don't think they actually speak. Like
she
points.
Just points.
Yeah, so there's not even an exchange of dialogue.
Such an easy thing to do, but yeah. But there were no women allowed in this movie, so yeah. it was a whole.
I guess it makes me feel good that there are no women in the Illuminati.
Like, that's true.
It's just all men,
all male org.
Yeah.
Gosh. Well, this is certainly a movie that was released.
Certainly
there's no
it
way
was.
Around
no,
it.
No, it actually I think did really well. I was reading and it said it was like the highest grossing movie with a female protagonist since Alien.
I mean, it did. It especially when you account for international box office, I think it at least doubled its budget. So it did well, and a lot of people went to see it. But it's just that, as we've already discussed, it does
it's a not very
do.
Convenient form of quote unquote empowerment.
Right.
I'll play devil's advocate one more try to pass the Bechdel test. If an unnamed woman screams at Daniel Craig's penis, does that interaction pass the Bechdel test?
Well,
between
I would
her
say,
and the penis.
Yes. His penis is actually identifies as a woman.
A woman, yeah.
So, feminist icon, Daniel Craig's exposed penis.
Yeah, but no, I do not think the movie passes the Bechdel test.
I don't think it does.
Which
either.
It would have been very easy, as you have a female protagonist. You could have just seen, she could have had a woman character who lives in the house with her and helps out. Like, there were several opportunities for
there are
characters.
Several, like, lazy opportunities that were missed on, but. Whatever. We wash our hands of it. We hope we hope for the best for the reboot.
Indeed.
We hope
so
for the best.
With that, let's rate the movie on our nipple scale.
Let's do it.
We have a scale of 0 to 5 nipples
where
we rate the movie based on its portrayal of women. I think I'm going to give it like a 1.5 or 2. I'll stick with 1.5. This movie had a lot of potential. I think on paper it was probably a much better version than we see on screen because it's a female action hero kicking ass and saving the world. Again, we talk about how very rarely do we see women get to save the day. Like, stakes are usually pretty low when a woman is the protagonist of a movie.
Usually usually the thing at stake is she going to get married?
Yeah. Is the boy going to love her back?
Yeah.
So I always like it to see when it's like a woman starring in the movie and the stakes are high and that she's saving the day. But because she is hypersexualized in a way that male action heroes aren't,
right.
because she needs a lot of help and she isn't as active as she could be and that a lot of information gets handed to her rather than her seeking it out herself. Just the fact that there are no other women in the entire fucking movie.
That's the big thing. It's like, where? Where are they?
I'm gonna say
they literally go across the globe
and still no women.
Where are they? They're, this version of the world, Angelina Jolie is the only woman. And also there is a rogue woman who will show up and scream at Daniel Craig's people. That was so
it
was a bit much.
There's a scene where she goes into an auction that's happening to talk to someone and she sits down and she accidentally bids on something and it's a hilarious joke that we all just laugh and laugh.
We've all been there. We've all bid
but
too many millions.
There's an
extremely relatable.
There's another woman who's also bidding.
Teehee.
So that's another woman we do see in the movie. So congratulations.
Wow.
Feminist icon.
Well, then
it would be funny if it was the same woman and she's just wearing a different disguise each time. I would love
that. Woman who
like one she just has a mustache and then another she has like a top hat. some like ascot or like some absurd scarf.
I want to read her memoirs.
Cravat. Sorry, that was a Paddington 2 reference.
Oh, wait, who are you giving your nipples to?
Oh, one of them goes to Lara because I think she could have been a really great character that could have represented women really well. But because this movie was made by men for a male audience, adapted from a game that was targeted toward young boys, it's just catering toward a very male audience, and therefore it ends up being bad. So I feel like there's a lot of potential. She deserved a lot more. So Laura gets one of them. And then my half nipple goes to Bryce because he was in Paddington 2.
Okay.
I'm going to give it 1.5 as well. There's like a number of breakdowns for why this movie doesn't work for me. It sucks because there are scenes that I could clearly see working on paper, and then the act of sabotage that takes place is in the cinematography and in the editing and in
the costume design.
The costume design, where it's just like a signal to me of just like, oh, we need more women working behind the scenes and this wouldn't be fucking happening, because it is a, you know, vastly male dominated behind the scenes crew. And then there's other parts where it's like, well, there is a writing breakdown because there is only one female character. So it doesn't bode well. I'll give one of my nipples to Lara as well, because I think she deserved better. Hopefully she'll get better in the reboot.
Yes, hoping that as well.
Cautiously optimistic, but we saw what happened with Flatliners. You never know. And I'll give my half nippy to Daniel Craig, but when his nippy is stabbed.
Okay.
His stabbed nippy.
Cool.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that, like, I do feel like you can be a superhero and be sexy and also have huge tits. I think all those things can happen. But I think it was the way that she was shown and portrayed in this.
She can have whatever body type she wants.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm afraid I might have come off as sounding perhaps body shamey to Angelina Jolie because of her ginormous boobs.
No, but I mean,
movie.
But they padded them to be even bigger.
That's
what
the thing.
We're saying, like, is right. Like, dude, we know you did that for the dudes. Like, you,
right.
You, that's the way that she was made in this game. And instead, with Alicia, they're kind of keeping it her normal body. And so it's just like, you know, when you don't let a woman have her own, like, they didn't do that for Wonder Woman, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
right.
When you're changing a sexual part of a woman so that men will be more interested in it,
yes.
I think is what we're saying.
That's, yeah, exactly.
Right. It's like Angelina Jolie is
gorgeous. She already has huge tits.
And that's great. Like, she doesn't need assistance to be looking very hot. But yeah, it's all, I mean, it totally, it, and just in the same way that in Transformers, you see Megan Fox and it's like, yeah, she's beautiful. That's not the issue. The issue is the way that we see her, because we're seeing her through a male lens and in cropped.
Or you're dressing them in a way that's unrealistic for fighting crime.
Yes.
You know, like that's something that I do like about, so they have, Captain Marvel is another one that's coming out with Brie Larson, and like they just released some of her armor and it looks like she's going into battle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like a crop top and like this tiny little where.
And she's still hot.
Yeah. It's like, it's shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that scene in Wonder Woman where she puts on the glasses and Etta Candy's like, and suddenly she's not the hottest woman you have ever seen in your life. Like, they're still gonna be fucking gorgeous as shit. They're millionaire movie model actresses. So,
yeah.
But I think what we mean is when you're altering the way a woman looks so that a man will be more interested in the movie.
Yeah, and that's highlighting those features of her body.
Yeah.
Pretty much exclusively to cater to a male gaze. That is what I have a problem with, not her body itself.
And that's like that's how a lot of 90s comic book women were drawn, with tiny, tiny snatched waist.
Right. Yeah. That's an adaptation.
Huge hits. Yeah. And it's just like showing women with all body sizes would be a lot nicer to me, especially if you have superpowers. You don't actually have to be super tiny. If you have superpowers, you can do, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
So
honestly, if
you can be, but that shouldn't be the only representation of a superhero woman.
Exactly.
Is
hard agree.
But yeah, I guess I would give it two nippies. One to Lara Croft, because I did think that some of her action sequences were kind of badass. And she was good with guns, which I always appreciate. And then my other, I'm going to give it to, you know what? I liked all of the husky dogs in it. I'm a dog person.
The dog scene at the end where she bursts out of the tomb with the husky dogs, yeah. That was very exciting.
Yeah, that was actually really cool. I liked that. She looked badass when she was in that scene. So I'm going to give it to that scene.
Cool. Yeah. Well, Danny, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, we're so excited we got you.
Thank you.
What would you like? How can people follow you? What would you like to plug?
Yeah, I'm at Ms. Danny Fernandez. I tweet a lot about superhero stuff, so you can follow me on there. And also anime, which that's a whole nother thing about representation of women. Mm-hmm. But some of the ones I'm into have really, you know, they have women as genius scientists and things like that. So I love that as well. I am a host over at Hyper RPG. So you can, if you're on Twitch, you can check out that. And then my co-host, Iffy Wadiwe, and I have a new podcast coming out called Nerdificent, where we tackle different issues in nerd culture, and that's going to be on How Stuff Works. So that'll be dropping soon. Yeah.
Awesome.
Wow. Oh, wait, I did want to say one more thing. I want to take my nipple back from Daniel Craig and give it to Jimmy Pardo. Thank you.
Oh, yes, obviously.
Thank you. He's never not funny.
He's never not funny.
He's always playing games.
You can follow the Bechdelcast on all the platforms. You can tweet at us. You can rate and review us on iTunes. You can subscribe to our Patreon. It's $5 a month, and you get 2 bonus episodes every month, and it helps us out and it helps you out. And you can...
get our merch on our website, bechdelcast.com/merch.
So many things.
And you can listen to Never Not Funny with Jimmy Pardo.
You can do that as well.
If you want.
Check out, if you want, the new Tomb Raider movie and tweet at us about your thoughts on it.
We're going to see it.
I'm going to see it. Yeah.
Totally. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. Celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection. Obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.